You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Back toward the line for Ekholm. Shoots. That's blocked off of Trouba. Came back toward the near side. Smith with a shot and scores. Underneath the bar over the shoulder of Hellebuck, and it's 2-1 Nashville.
That from Thursday night was the game-winning goal for the Nashville Predators. Craig Smith scoring in the second period en route to a 4-1 Predators victory over the Winnipeg Jets at MTS Center. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live online at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We start with the current Winnipeg Jets homestand. It continues on as it has not gone well for the home team. 1-4 in their last 5 games at home. We had said 2 weeks ago today that this was a key season-defining homestand. And so far, it has been defined with a big negative mark for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, good morning, boys. It was obviously a disappointing loss, Drew, as you mentioned a couple of nights ago. And it certainly wasn't as an exciting game as it was last week when we saw 9 goals between the Jets and the Predators. I was expecting certainly more offense in that game, and it was, quite frankly, a pretty boring game. Sometimes that can be a good thing, especially when the Jets are on the road. But, you know, you mentioned it, Drew. The Jets have lost 4 of their last 5 at home, and now they find themselves 8 points behind the Colorado Avalanche, which is amazing considering that 5 or 6 weeks ago it looked like the Avalanche were out of it. And the Jets are now 5 points behind the Nashville Predators for 6th in the Central Division. So it's not looking good right now. And you look at how the Jets have performed on the road, and it certainly hasn't been good. And we mentioned this kind of, you know, towards the beginning of January when the Jets had all of these home games coming up, 9 of 10 at home here. And you mentioned, you know, this was going to be kind of a defining moment of the season. And the reason why it was going to be so defining was because the Jets really needed to make up a lot of ground that they really lost out on beginning in November. They fell behind the Central Division pack, and they've really just stayed there. And they've been stuck in 7th place in the Central Division. Now, I know a lot of people want to talk about the lack of depth for the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, I look at the Winnipeg Jets and the way they've played this season, and I mean, special teams have been an issue. Their play on the road, as I just mentioned, has been an issue. The performance against the Central Division has been an issue, losing 3 times to Colorado. Nashville's got points in 3 of their 4 games against the Jets. The Jets are, what, 6-12-1 against the Central Division? I mean, Drew, they've only won 6 games out of 19 so far against the Central Division. And last year, one of the reasons why they made the playoffs was because they were so good against the Central Division. So I don't necessarily know that it's just the lack of depth that you can point out, Richie, because I look at, you know, Andrew Ladd, Brian Little, Matthew Perreault, the guys that you count on to score goals, they're not scoring right now. You know, Andrew Ladd hasn't scored a goal in a long time. I think Brian Little's got 1 goal in his last 12. Matthew Perreault hasn't scored in 5. I mean, Nikolai Ehlers has started to put the puck in that. He was struggling before that. I mean, they just don't seem to be able to put it all together. It seems to always be, you know, one thing or another that's not going right. I mean, you look at the Jets. I think if the Jets score a power play goal in that first period, it's a completely different game. And I mean, you could say that's completely obvious, but the special teams just don't seem to bail them out of those close games. Because again, you could say, you know, the Jets, this is the final nail in the coffin, right? But really, that game was completely wide open. I mean, Nashville scores with you know, 1.5 minutes left, whatever it was. But that was a 1-goal game.
Sure.
And you know, the Colorado game, that game was close until the end. I mean, it's not like the Jets are getting hammered here by teams coming into their building. They're just not winning close games.
I mean, if they're healthy, if they have a couple of those guys, certainly they get a few more points here. We know that. Scheifele obviously being the biggest loss of those players, being the center. Being able to carry the play for large periods of time, but the depth. I mean, we talked about it at the outset of the season,
mm-hmm.
and it's rearing its ugly head now. And so you have to say, okay, how far are we out of it here? How close are we to the trade deadline? So today's January 23rd. The trade deadline's February 29th.
Yeah.
Realistically, they're pretty much out of it. Unless they were to get their full team back healthy, stay healthy. Like, this is the thing. If they get everybody back healthy, if they stay healthy, if they play really well under those circumstances, they have still a very slight chance of making the playoffs. So with the pending free agencies and such hanging in the balance here, you know, there's not enough time. There might not be, as we said before, there's probably not enough time to figure out if you're going to make it or not. And so that's what you have to look in a different direction, I think. So then you look at possibly selling assets and seeing what's on the market for them, looking long term. Because, and I want to talk about it later in the show, Drew, but this squad is not good enough. I mean, the teams ahead of them in the standings that aren't in the playoffs are better than them.
Mm-hmm.
Even the healthy squad, certainly you can make a very good argument that Nashville's a better team than the Jets.
Especially now with Ryan Johansson
in
the lineup.
Been dynamite since he got over there.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows if that'll continue. And there will be moves. Like, this is the thing, guys. Teams in the playoffs will only get better. They're not going to get worse. I mean, unless there's injuries, but they're not going to get worse, I mean, via trade
mm-hmm.
before the deadline. They're going to add something. And if they don't add, they're going to stay the same. So how do you make up ground there? And you can't trade now, as we said last week, for a guy that's going to help you only in the short term here. And Kevin Cheveldayoff has shown a propensity to not really trade anyways. Obviously, the big deal with Kane, notwithstanding, that is a significant deal. So it was a good deal for the team. But he's not going to be a mover and shaker. It's not like a Jim Nill.
Yeah, he's not going to just shake up the lineup for the sake of doing so. Yeah, I mean, I think as you made a great point when you look back at Thursday's game. If the Jets capitalize on the power, I mean, they score the goal early in the game. Ehlers, who again, each game you see the flashes of what made him such a high draft pick for the Winnipeg Jets.
They could have put that game out of reach, though, right? And that was the point. I mean, if they score a couple, and it was a beautiful goal by Nikolaj Ehlers. You got to give Ehlers credit. He's certainly played better over the last 2 or 3 weeks than he was the previous month when he was really struggling mm-hmm. to score goals. But, I mean, the point being that the special teams have just been an issue all year. We've talked about it a lot on this show, and they just haven't improved. I mean, you've got the 29th-ranked power play, the 27th-ranked penalty kill. I mean, you've essentially, if you combine the penalty kill and the power play, the Jets have the worst special teams in the NHL. Yeah. And you could say that you could still make the playoffs, Richie, without a good power play. We've talked about it before. I mean, Chicago, the years they were winning the early cups, they didn't have a very good power play during the regular season, but the fact is they're not scoring enough 5-on-5 either, right? I mean, the Jets, I was looking at it, and the last 8 games, I believe 6 of those 8 games, they've scored 2 or less goals.
Well, I mean, as you look at the roster, and it's half NHL, half AHL.
Yeah.
And to be perfectly honest with you, I mean, if you want to go over the, and I'm sure the fans and the people listening have gone over this and thought about it. I mean, if you want to say, okay, let's look at the Jets' lines from the last game, okay, and Cobb, Hallis, Chuck, and Thorburn, and Cormier, Lapon, and Peluso. You tell me how many times when those guys go on the ice, you think the team has any chance of scoring a goal. And I'm trying to be respectful here, but has any chance of scoring a goal?
Right, but again, to me, it's not necessarily that. I mean,
these wouldn't be the first line in the Moose.
You could, for me, I mean, it's your top players that aren't scoring. That's the biggest issue. Andrew Ladd doesn't have a goal in 12 games.
Yeah, Andrew Ladd has had a poor year.
Brian Little has one goal in his last 12 games.
But over the course of the year, as Little and Wheeler have been terrific.
I'm talking about the last little while. Matthew Perreault has 0 goals in his last 5
games. Matthew Perreault does, beginning of the season, doesn't score. Then goes on a hot streak. I mean, that's what Matthew Perreault is.
He's a streaky player. I mean,
he's a good player, though.
To expect that your best player, I mean, we've seen that. We know enough about Ladd and Little at this point in their careers to know that they always do go through droughts. Now, 12 games without a goal for Andrew Ladd is longer than a typical drought for him. And that's, there's a red flag there. But when you have nobody else on the roster to pick up the slack
a little bit. I've gone to a couple of Moose games. Like these players, like Cormier, Lapon, and Peluso, cannot be an AHL first line.
Yeah.
Like they cannot be an AHL first line. Thorburn, Hallis, Chuck, and Kopp, maybe an AHL first or second line. And like when you're questioning that and you're playing in a top 9 role,
In the NHL.
In the NHL?
Yeah.
You can't go out and hope. You can't have two lines that you go out and hope for a couple of nights aren't minuses. Don't get scored on. See what I mean? Like, then you have so much pressure on the second line, which is two rookies anyways.
Sure.
And Perreault. And then your top line, which has been a really good top. I know Ladd struggled. But, I mean, Wheeler has been tremendous. And the thing about Wheeler is even when he doesn't perform, he works so damn hard that it's infectious. Little is steady as he's going to have the struggles. Don't get me wrong. But like, they know what they're getting from Brian Little. But, I mean, it's just so hard to compete when you know you have no chance of offense there.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly. There's only so much analysis that we can provide when you just at some point in time have to sit back and say, look at the players they're putting out on the ice on a shift-by-shift basis.
And we said, what was it, the game prior to, before Colorado. I'm trying to remember who they played before Colorado.
That before Colorado was the win in Minnesota, the 1-0 victory.
So we said on that after that show that was an impressive victory, that they played really well. But what would happen if they started to trail in games? And when they start trailing in games, there's too much pressure to score because they can't.
I mean, you saw it against Colorado. They were down. They controlled the play, I thought, against Colorado for the most part, but they couldn't get the puck in the net to, they were down 1-0. They were down 2-0.
Right.
They couldn't get the equalizer. They're down 2-1 to Nashville on Thursday.
It's tough with this.
You can't get the equalizer. I know it. And it was a close game right up until, the last 2 minutes of the third period. It's when you can't score. I mean, this team can't score. Take away the 5-4 victory over Nashville. They scored one goal in their last 5 out of 6 games. I mean,
well, they've scored one goal or less in 6 of their last 10 games.
Yeah, well, you're not going to win
in
the NHL.
There you go, Izzy.
I mean,
Hellebuck's been real solid.
He's given you everything. Everything you've ever asked for from Connor Hellebuck.
Sure, for sure.
This isn't a goaltending issue. This isn't a team defense issue. It's a function of there's just not enough good players on the roster, especially with all the injuries. There's not enough good players on the roster to compete on a night-in, night-out basis against the majority of the other NHL teams.
Well, I don't know if it's that simple. I mean, when the Jets are healthy, I don't think it's
when they're healthy,
yes.
That's not an issue. But the thing is that they're not right now, and this is as you mentioned before, at the outset, this is a crucial homestand, right?
And it so happens, it's unfortunate for the Jets that their injury bug, which was inevitably going to hit at some point in time, hit right during this key homestand in the season.
And didn't spread itself out and kind of happen all at once.
That's right. It all, you got this. You got the three injuries that happened back to back to back to back, and they survived the one game in Minnesota because you're going to survive for a little while, but eventually the lack of talent is going to come back and it's going to bite you, and that's what we're seeing right now with this Winnipeg Jets. Now they're expected to get a little bit healthier today. I think Drew Stafford is probably in quotes there, expected to play. He was taking some power play time yesterday at practice. They should skate while we're on air, so we will provide that update. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel. The question is it now too late for that light for the season and the playoff hopes?
Desi's point, like when they're healthy, the thing is when they're healthy, they're going to win games.
Sure.
So, I mean, if you're doing the whole tank for Matthews or whatever it's going to be, and the things switch so quickly in this league because of the parity. Mm-hmm. But with the roster healthy, they're going to win games. That might be a little bit too late.
Well, let's head to break. I want to come back and talk about how beneficial it would be to this franchise long term if they end up with one of those top 5 selections. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Jacob Trouba, Joshua Morrison, Nikolai Ehlers, Kyle Connor.
And with that is the Winnipeg Jets' top draft picks over the last 5 seasons. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. I played that clip of the last Jets draft picks. Obviously, there are some other first rounders. Rory played that clip. We played that clip.
Yeah.
The collective, we played that clip. To talk about the
impact. Rory played that clip.
Okay, fine. to talk about the impact.
No, I and we, Drew.
Yes, there is. But there is in Mindell. Anyways, to talk about the impact on this franchise, what would the impact be going forward if they do end up in a bottom five draft pick selection, if they end up in the bottom five in the NHL at the end of the season? Is that a good thing for the longevity, not the longevity, but the long-term on-ice results for this franchise if they end up being able to draft one of the top three, four, five players somewhere where they haven't been able to draft thus far since they've returned from Atlanta?
Well, first of all, it seems ridiculous that we're talking about this, but right now, if the season ended, the Jets would be picking in the top five. I mean, they certainly are in close to the bottom five. The draft lottery might change that a little bit, Drew, but I mean, to answer your question, I mean, if you nail that draft pick, it has the potential to improve your team greatly, right? I mean, you look at the Arizona Coyotes with Max Domi. I mean, clearly other teams, a lot of other teams, you know, have turned their seasons around after drafting a really good player. Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado, they win the division the first year with Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, you could go on and on. Sidney Crosby completely turned around the Pittsburgh Penguins along with Evgeny Malkin. Before that, Mario Lemieux completely turned around the Pittsburgh Penguins. They were a laughingstock of the NHL when he was drafted in 1984-85. So, yeah, I mean, if you have the ability to draft in the top three to five, say, and you get, whether it's a Matthew Tkachuk, a Jesse Puljujärvi, Patrick Laine, whoever it is, Jacob Chychrun.
Austin Matthews, if you want to.
I mean, if you nail your draft pick and 1 or 2 years down the road, Richie, he's playing in the NHL, and he has now improved a certain area of your team, whether it's forward depth or defensive depth, sure, I mean, that could benefit the Jets in the long term. I mean, they clearly, the Jets are always going to have to nail their draft picks, regardless if they're picking 3rd, 5th, or 17th, right? And Kyle Connor, that looks like a pretty good draft pick right now. He's a Hobie Baker contender right now with the University of Michigan. So, I mean, Jacob Trouba was a good draft pick. I mean, the Jets really haven't had too many bad draft picks. Connor Hellebuck was a 4th rounder.
They've drafted really well.
So, I mean, yeah. I mean, if the Jets end up not making the playoffs this year, you'd probably want to draft in the top 5 as opposed to 11th, right? But, I mean, who knows at this point? I mean, it's only January, and the Jets are certainly not going to tank. I mean, this whole notion of tanking for any team is ridiculous. If you're a bad team, you're a bad team.
Yeah, players don't tank. We've said it so many times. Players play, coaches coach. And if the management gives them such a team that they play and they coach and they're just not good enough, okay.
Yeah, well, but
nobody in that locker room is tanking.
Like, Richie, Buffalo wasn't tanking last year. They were awful.
Yeah, like the manager made them a terrible team. The players tried hard. I mean, the coach wasn't, in my opinion, a very good coach. And they had no structure.
A lot of people thought the New Jersey Devils were going to be one of the worst teams in the NHL
absolutely.
This year. They're a couple points behind the Rangers.
Yeah.
That's the league now, right? But you look at, you know, to your question before, Drew, also about, okay, you know, how does it serve you? Look at the standings. Look at the top nine teams. Washington, Ovechkin, Backstrom. Chicago, Kane, Taves.
Yeah.
Okay? Dallas. Now, Dallas doesn't have the high pick.
But sure they do. They have Sagan.
Well, I was going to say they traded for Sagan.
Yeah, well.
Okay, but, yeah, obviously you trade for Sagan, so there's your second overall pick. St. Louis, that's a bit of an exception up there.
Yeah, okay. With the exception of Bomeister on the back end, they don't have...
Yeah, that was trades and
of
trades
course,
ago.
Of course.
Okay? Los Angeles, Doughty number two. And from what I hear, from years and years ago, they would have taken Doughty number one over Stamkos. Like, that's how high they were
on Doughty. I think you can make the argument he should go number one.
Oh, I think everybody would take him now, probably.
Probably.
But what I had heard at that draft is that they were going to take Doughty if they had that. Like, Doughty was their number one on the board.
Sure.
They've got two cups.
Florida, Aaron Ekblad.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Barkov.
Yeah. All right. And Huberdeau.
Yeah.
The Rangers, another exception there.
Well,
so
they
same,
have Rick Nash.
Sure. Okay. By trade. But so you have you're kind of two exceptions. Yeah. And then you have the Islanders, John Tavares. And you have Tampa Bay, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman.
That's right. And Detroit, who's 10th, is really the only team that hasn't even acquired one of those, you know, top five former draft picks. Detroit is the biggest of all the outliers there. But it does, I mean, you know, you can't, you know, we laugh about
although,
it.
Although, but you know, you have to, conversely, you have to provide the other side, Edmonton.
Edmonton is the, yes, Edmonton, you know, Calgary to some extent, you know, Anaheim.
Well, Calgary hasn't been the duration of struggles based on what they're doing.
Well, you know what? I think Richie brings up a really good point, though, because Edmonton's had, I think, 25 first overall picks
yeah.
now. But, I mean...
Don't wait till they win the lottery again and are able to draft Matthews.
But, Drew, it's not just about drafting in the first, second, third slot. It's developing, right? Everybody drafts. Richie said this multiple times on the show, right? And it's true. You got to develop those players, and you got to draft the right players.
Sure.
I mean, you could make an argument that the Oilers should have drafted Ryan Murray first overall, as opposed to letting him go to Columbus in 2012, right? You could argue that they've drafted too many skilled small forwards.
Absolutely.
They haven't drafted
Absolutely.
The right players, right? Absolutely. So you got to draft the right players, and the Jets, as we've talked about, have drafted very well.
Yeah.
Since they've come over from Atlanta. They drafted pretty well in Atlanta, too. I mean, you could say what you want about Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian, Alexander Burmistrov. All those players are playing in the NHL, and they've had varying degrees of success. But they've drafted well. Certainly Marcel Komo knows what he's doing. So you look at the Jets, and, I mean, there is a chance that they do get a top-five overall pick for the first time since coming over. I mean, it's a distinct reality.
The only top-five pick they have on their roster is Blake Wheeler, who was, of course, drafted that high by the Arizona Coyotes, oh, gosh, however many years ago that was. Now
it was 2004.
Before he went to Boston and then over here, then to Atlanta and back to Winnipeg. So, I mean, this is why if you are that bad, you know, they've been sixth, they've been seventh, they've been seventh and ninth and 11th and 13th and everything else.
The biggest thing
be terrible if you can be that bad.
My only issue with that is usually the teams that are doing that have in some way planned to do that.
Sure.
Not all of them for sure, but there is some idea, okay, we're going to, like Calgary, we're going to tear it down.
Mm-hmm.
We're finally going to tear this thing down. The Jets have not done that. So that leads to questions of management has taken you to a spot of this pick with the plan being something different, where are you headed with management?
Sure. I mean, in an ideal situation, you want to be the San Antonio Spurs when they drafted Tim Duncan. They were
sure. I mean, that happened with Galchenyuk in Montreal.
Sure.
That happened with Van Riemsdyk in Philly.
Right.
Let's keep it on the hockey itch.
Okay, I'll keep it. No, but you understand the parallels.
Yes, that idea.
That the Spurs were terrible just for that 1 year. As it so happened, because David Robinson was injured. I mean, I know I'm switching to different sports now.
Holy Drew. I mean, this is back when you were, what, 64?
Well, I mean, that's what you want. You want to sort of have a bad year where everything goes wrong for you, and then you're able to get that pick, and then it's not a complete rebuild. It's just a fortuitous timing that you're able to bring in this tremendously skilled player to your roster without having to tear everything else down at the same time.
And the reason why, if you're the Jets or you're a Jets fan and the Jets are going to miss the playoffs, you want a higher pick, is because the Jets are not rebuilding. The Jets' goal at the beginning of the year was to make the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the Jets are able to get whether it's maybe not a first overall pick, maybe it's not Austin Matthews, but maybe it is a Matthew Tkachuk or Puljujarvi or Patrick Laine. There's a lot of talk of possibly a team trading up to draft both of those guys. The draft this year, guys, is looking pretty good. Last year's draft was a good one with Eichel and Hanifin and, of course, Connor McDavid. But this one, I mean, the scouts are saying this one's going to be a pretty good one too. So the reason why it would be beneficial if you're the Jets to get a top pick is because you have the ability to have a player who's going to step in the NHL next year, right, and contribute next year. Not take 2 or 3 years to develop, mm-hmm. potentially go into the NHL next year. You're talking about Austin Matthews. He's been playing in the Swiss Professional League. Laine and Puljujarvi, they're playing in the Finnish Elite
mm-hmm,
League,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, these guys can step right into the NHL.
Yeah.
So you probably want a guy like that as opposed to maybe a player who's going to take 2 or 3 years to develop.
And you can sort of expect, you can sort of, not expect, but you can, a top five pick entering into the league and being a player in the league is not unheard of by any stretch of the imagination. A top 10 or a top 15 player, it's a little less heard of, where they need more years of development.
It depends also what position you are and all that.
But, I mean, Aaron Ekblad was able to do it, and he played the hardest position of them all.
Yes, true, but Aaron Ekblad is the exception rather than the rule.
When it comes to defensemen, certainly. But I mean,
he also has the body of a 35-year-old guy. He's like Landeskog. He looks like a man since he was 14.
Yes, I mean, you're right. And if
you saw Aaron Ekblad on the street, it's kind of like LeBron James is too. If you saw Aaron Ekblad on the street, you'd think he's 30.
Well, and you can, I mean, Lane and Puljujarvi both are already big and filled out. I mean, so that to Ezzie's point of them being able to step into the NHL, they're not like Mark Scheifele was when the Jets drafted him, who was so slight and everything else, and he needed the couple other years of seasoning before he could get his legs under him. And that's not a criticism by any stretch.
By the way, Drew, are we talking about where the Jets are going to draft in January?
Unfortunately, we are, because I don't think we're going to be talking about where they're playing in the playoffs in April. And that's the downside to the whole thing.
It's January.
Well, you know what? Look at the, you know,
come on.
When you're bottom five in the league, that's what you talk about. Let's head to break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the heat that Kevin Cheveldayoff, should he be feeling heat over the Jets' performance this year? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's 9:30 Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. An update from the Jets game day skate. Drew Stafford, Mark Scheifele, and Alex Burmistrov are all on the ice this morning for the Winnipeg Jets. Stafford, in particular, is not wearing a non-contact jersey.
Drew, how many more double negatives are you going to put in that one?
I'm sorry, it's unfortunate, but I'm not sure what color jersey Scheifele and Burmistrov are wearing. We'll get you a complete
update. They're actually wearing a jersey at all.
They're not wearing a jersey at all. It's a shirts versus skins practice at MTS Center. We'll give you a full update of both the Jets' lines and everything else later on in the program, but it is at least looking good for the Winnipeg Jets to get some of their walking wounded back into the lineup. Still to come on the show this morning, in about 30 minutes, Matt Laughlin, New Jersey Devils broadcaster, is going to join us. We're going to be joined by Arizona Coyotes general manager Don Maloney in 1 hour's time. And then in 2 hours from now, Andy Strickland, St. Louis Blues reporter, is going to join us. So a jam-packed show ahead for you. Still to come on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Rady Fitness Center, official fitness facility of Illegal Curve Radio. With 52,000 square feet of gym space, new equipment, and a saltwater pool, get back in shape and reclaim your glory days at the Rady Fitness Center. For details and to save up to $100 off of a new membership, visit radyjcc.com/illegalcurve. Thrilled to welcome the Rady Fitness Center as a sponsor of the show, of course, as he's going to get back, reclaim his glory days, as you heard on the commercial.
The commercials, as is so funny.
Should just mention, too, that another game has been postponed.
Yeah, another game. The NHL, with the snowstorm that is leveling the sort of east coast of the United States, the Islanders-Flyers game from that's scheduled to go today in Brooklyn has been postponed, as well as tomorrow's...
When did Al Roker start hosting this show?
Ezzie's Al Roker, apparently. And then the Capitals-Penguins game tomorrow has also been postponed in Washington. Kevin Cheveldayoff, you know, this is year five of the Winnipeg Jets being back at this point. They've made one playoff appearance. They've got zero playoff victories. How much heat, if any, should Kevin Cheveldayoff begin to feel at his door over the team's performance?
You know, he should be feeling heat at this point, Drew. That's a fair amount of time to be struggling. I think a couple of things. He had basically ended up with a 7-year contract, but very much you hear about kind of a 5-year time frame, and this is where we're at. The drafts have been strong. How much responsibility he gets for that is a whole different story. I'm not in the room. I would hazard to guess he doesn't have much input after the first round. I don't really know how much input he has into the first round. But again, that is a guess.
And that's standard sort of across the
league. Yeah, I mean, you trust. Now, again, you should be credited for trusting your scouts as well. So I don't want to take away from that. And we talked about it at length. We're not going to get into the details of it, but how this Ladd Bufflin thing is dealt with, I think we'll say a lot about where he's taking this team and where the squad is going, and what you get in return. Because in this day and age, like if you look at it, you know, Hellebuck looks solid. You have Trouba on the back end, and again, all these guys you've drafted, you have some pieces there. So if you were to want a quick turnaround in the league, we've seen every team can do it. Quick turnarounds in the league are not that hard. They really aren't that hard. So can you get some pieces and turn this around quickly with a young up-and-coming roster? Now you have the Trouba and Scheifele contracts you have to worry about later as well. Lowry seems like less of a concern now based on how poorly he's played over the course of the year. But he should start feeling heat. And if he doesn't properly deal with those two big free agents, then you have to wonder where the team is going under his leadership. You have to wonder that. If he's able to address them both in a, well, you know, what I think we think would be a pretty reasonable fashion, and either sign the players, get something in return for them, whatever it may be, then okay, you see what you have. You probably think probably the jury's still out, but at the end of a 5-year term for an NHL general manager, you should have a pretty good idea of where the team's going, and right now we don't.
Ezzy, before I let you jump in, let me read this following quote from Paul Friesen of Sun Sports. The general manager gambled on youth to fill out the bottom of his forward lines this season and lost.
Oh, so I don't say one thing about that. That's true, and there's two parts to it, okay? One is ownership might have said, hey, you have no more money to spend. So that's partly an ownership thing. However, if you spend the amount of money you spend on Paul Postma to do nothing all year and not use him that you could have spent on a forward, just an example, or any other NHL player, then you also bear some responsibility.
The league's lowest payroll when it comes to salary cap hit is, not so coincidentally, rubbing shoulders with the bottom feeders in the NHL's Western Conference. That's a failure on Cheveldayoff's part. This team's roster is woefully inadequate to handle the rigors of a playoff push, not to mention the postseason itself, particularly when it loses a top six forward or two for any length of time.
Yeah, I love Paul Friesen, but I don't agree with everything he says there. And I think, you know, he's speaking in generalities as well. I mean, the Jets obviously went younger this year, but if they don't make the playoffs, is that only because the young players didn't succeed? I mean, no. The special teams haven't been good. The Jets' record against the Central Division has not been good. The Jets' record on the road has not been good. It's not all on the young players. That's not the only reason why the Jets aren't in a playoff spot right now, in my opinion. Nikolaj Ehlers has been good. Andrew Kopp, I wasn't expecting him to score 20 goals this year. Right. I actually like Andrew Kopp's game. And sure, you know, could you use a Lee Stempniak or a Jim Slater on this team? I think so. You know, I find it funny that 1 year after the Evander Kane trade and 1 year after, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff is being praised for, you know, the good trade that he made with Evander Kane and the fact that this young team is going into the playoffs and we have the deepest pool of prospects. 1 year later, everybody's saying that, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff hasn't done a good job. It's amazing how things change in 1 year, right? And that shows that furthers Richie's point about how, you know, and I agree, he should be feeling somewhat pressure. And, I mean, a general manager in any league should be feeling pressure when the team isn't doing well.
A general manager in a different market than this would be feeling more pressure than he's feeling.
I agree with that.
It's sort of bizarre that this hockey mad community here is actually a relatively easy market when it comes to criticism.
It depends on who you are. I think Andrew Ladd would disagree.
Fine. But for Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Yeah, well, I mean, that comes as, you know, selling of the when the Jets came back, of that patience, happy to be here for a couple of years, sure. And then the patience of that plan. But when you're seeing now is your fight. I don't think, Drew, I mean, you see the tickets are available,
mm-hmm.
and people and the ads for them, and people are growing a little bit tired of seeing. See, to me, I think one of the problems is you're seeing very much many of the same players still playing that were the first year, and the struggles are very similar.
See, guys, my point is, you know, would I have liked to have seen Chevy sign a Lee Stempniak or, you know, a veteran forward in the offseason to bolster the team's forward depth? Absolutely. Is the lack of a Lee Stempniak or a Jiří Tolusti on this team the only reason why the Jets aren't in the playoffs? No.
I think it's the reason why they're struggling.
It's one of the reasons. The defense hasn't been very good. I sound like a broken record here.
Well, the special teams haven't been very good. Special teams have been horrendous.
Right.
Well, how much of that is on
Coaching. Coaching's too.
I was going to say, how much of that is on
coaching
the general
too,
manager?
But I mean, at the same time, we had Claude Noel on. And I mean, how much different have the power play numbers been? When you throw out the same unit, except save for Enstrom-Perreault swap,
mm-hmm.
What do you expect?
It's the same power play unit since pretty much year one or year two, and the results have been relatively similar.
I mean, you're paying Adam Pardy and Paul Postma combined $9 million this year,
mm-hmm.
to both have essentially no effect on your roster. At defense, a position that if you have to go down and pull somebody up, probably not much worse than either of those guys.
Sure.
Well, I think that's something that's not talked about enough. I mean, it was all about how the Jets improved their defensive play last year, right? And I agree. But you look at this defense, and certain players have not performed to the levels that were expected out of them. Jacob Trouba, Tobias Enstrom. I mean, Tobias Enstrom's having an awful year offensively and defensively, in my opinion. And because he makes $5.75 million, it seems like he's untouchable. I mean, I don't think he's a number one or number two defenseman on a lot of teams.
See, I see your point. So I just don't think, like, I mean, I think they're Enstrom, Bufflin, Myers bring a lot of good qualities to the table. Trouba as well, excuse me. Like, I bring a lot of good qualities to the table. Obviously, there is a, you know, after that, there's a fall off. And I can see, you know, the criticisms in terms of some of the defensive play and such. But you paid for the depth on defense that probably is not much better than the depth you have on the Moose. Whereas at forward, you have a significant drop off.
Saying, why did you pay, you know?
Well, just because if money is so tight, if you're going to be a low cap team, and that, I understand that to an extent, and we don't have the books and see what everybody's making and all that in terms of the team. But the point is, if you have, okay, here's the GM, and the GM is told, you have a blank amount of money to spend. Mm-hmm. Why are you spending money on guys who are sitting in the press box on defense when you have a dire need at forward? Which was, had to have been identified in preseason meetings.
Sure. Especially when those same defensemen, for the most part, are available on your AHL roster, if you need to call them up. And I mean, the Moose are, you're not doing anything to hurt the Moose, because the Moose are pretty horrendous as well this year. So, you know, if you're taking their best defenseman off the roster,
what's the difference between Party and Harrison is my point.
There isn't one. So why don't you...
I mean, sure, Adam Party has more skills. He's better with the puck, okay?
If he can't crack the lineup, what's the difference?
Well, that's in Paul Postma, I mean, I don't know why the guy keeps getting signed, because he just never plays.
Sure.
And I'm not saying Anderson needs to play. That's the reason why the show. But why then do you keep signing him?
If you have
If
you have a finite amount of money and you never play one guy.
You're playing Stewart and Sherrod over him all the time. You clearly don't think he's good enough.
Sure. And that $900,000 or whatever can be
is
spent.
Is valuable if you're a low cap team.
Right. It can be spent on a forward where you knew that, you know, you just don't have anybody else if anybody ever gets injured when it came to the upfront players.
At the end of the day, though, I mean, we talked about it during the first segment. At the end of the day, your big boys that make the big money have to contribute, and that's on forward and on defense. You know, Tobias Enstrom has 1 point in his last 19 games.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Andrew Ladd doesn't have a goal in his last 11 games. These are the top paid guys on the team. They got to be better.
I like both of these players, but they haven't been good enough. Those points are fair.
It's going to be a very interesting next 5 weeks for the Winnipeg Jets as they head into the trade deadline, and we'll see what the shape of the roster is at that point in time. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll give a preview of tonight's Jets-Devils game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Green goes after and lost the puck. It's put out in front of a bouncing puck. Picked up by Perreault. Near side for Ladd. A shot. He scores! Andrew Ladd buries it this time with a one-timer from the faceoff dot. And a 3-1 Winnipeg.
That from October 9th. It seems like it was so long ago. The October 9th Jets-Devils game. The second game of the season. A Jets victory in New Jersey. We were all so young and innocent back then. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, and this weekend and next weekend as well at Raw Almond, the outdoor dining experience at the Forks. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information about Bernstein's and for more information about Bernstein's at Raw Almond, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Jets and the Devils tonight at MTS Center, a 6 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290. Here are the Winnipeg Jets forward lines. Based on practice this morning or the game day skate. Andrew Ladd, Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, no surprise. Joel Armia, Alex Burmistrov, and Chris Thorburn. So it looks like Burmistrov is going to check back into the lineup. Stafford, Perreault, and Ehlers. So it looks like Stafford's going to be back in. Halastruck, Kopp, and Peluso. That's your fourth line. So it looks like Scheifele still not quite ready to get back into the Jets lineup. Neither is Adam Lowry. But the forward group do get some reinforcements with Burmistrov and with Stafford getting back in the lineup. Defensive pairings are the same. And to the surprise of nobody, Connor Hellebuck will get the start and goal, his 20th start in the past 23 games.
Yeah, and Drew, we should also mention that our good friend Ken Weeb of the Sun is mentioning here on Twitter that it looks like J.C. LaPon and Patrice Cormier will be the guys that are reassigned to the Manitoba Moose to make room for Drew Stafford, who's going to be activated, we think.
Yes, activated off IR, barring something unforeseen occurring post-practice, because that's the Lions as they currently stand at MTS Center. The Jets and the Devils, safe to say, gentlemen, the New Jersey Devils, 24-19-5, second wild card spot in the Atlantic Division.
That's a surprise.
This is the surprise team in the NHL this season.
Yeah, the Florida Panthers, I think, would get some votes as well, Drew. But absolutely, and you guys know I'm a big Devils fan, and you look at this Devils team, and the big issue, we talked about it with the Jets, was scoring depth, right? And Kyle Palmieri scores his 20th goal of the year, the first time in his career he's ever scored 20 goals. It's really incredible, and Mike Camilleri is coming back from an injury. He's still leading the Devils in points. He missed, I believe, 8 games with an injury, and then he had a flu recently. But, I mean, this team still relies on Corey Schneider and defense, and it's a very young defense. With Adam Larson and Eric Jelena and Damon Severson, they've kind of defied the odds. And I think it shows you how weak the Eastern Conference is with how well the Devils have played. The Islanders and the Rangers, Drew, have certainly tailed off here in the early part of the second half of the season. But, you know, give John Hines and his coaching staff a lot of credit here, because as you mentioned before the season, not many people, myself included, were picking the New Jersey Devils to make the playoffs. But, you know, the roster, you look at the roster and there's, you know, kind of a lot of kind of guys that have been written off by other teams, whether it's a guy like Jordan Tutu or Tyler Kennedy. I mean, it's kind of a mishmash of forwards, especially in a really young decor that's played pretty well. But I think Corey Schneider, for me, is a Vezina candidate this year. He leads the NHL in starts for goaltenders.
Yeah.
He's been incredible.
21-14-5 Schneider is, with a .928 save percentage and a .206 goals against average.
Well, Rich, you look at his numbers.
That's where it starts.
Look at his numbers, you know, going back to Vancouver and going back to the Manitoba Moose, when the Manitoba Moose almost won the Calder Cup against the Hershey Bears. I mean, Corey Schneider is an excellent goalie.
He is.
And to me, he's been their MVP. It's not even close.
That's where it starts. He's just been so terrific, and as he's right, I mean, he's always been good. And so he gives them the stability between the pipes to be able to do things, to be able to give young defensemen, you're talking about guys who struggled with confidence before, like Adam Larson, a younger defenseman who I like Damon Severson, Eric Jelena. Having a guy between the pipes who can cover up mistakes for young defensemen are so important. And I mean, if you look at this roster, guys, the production they've got from veterans that people, you know, that maybe people have thought had better days, like a guy like Mike Camilleri.
Sure.
Look at the production they're getting from a guy that, you know, we always know Mike Camilleri was skilled and he can shoot the puck, but he's almost a point a game. Kyle Palmieri, as he
looks like a great trade right now.
20 goals, of course, 20 goals. He can shoot the pucks from the area. So think about that. I mean, just ideal for marketing purposes, you know, not even on, you know, in terms of on the ice. Obviously, Stemniak with 34 points in 48 games. A bunch of guys that people thought, okay, better days are have passed them by. And they've kind of rejuvenated their career with the opportunity. This squad is, you look at the back end, I think, because we talk about the net minding, and obviously we said that's a key. But you look at the back end, that's a pretty mobile back end. You have guys, Schlemko will move that puck. Obviously, his defensive liabilities for sure. But John Moore, he can skate. Severson's a smart defenseman. Larson, you have guys who can move the puck and skate pretty well. And so that allows you to take pressure. You have a solid goalie and take some pressure, skate it out of your own zone or make that pass to Andy Green. You have a pretty mobile back end, and it allows you to get out of pressure. And I think that's also a key factor for them.
Certainly, I agree with everything you guys just said there. They're really getting nothing to speak of from their bottom six forwards in terms of offense. This is a very top-heavy team. How do you see the Jets deploying their defense tonight against the Camilleri, Henrique, and Stempniak line?
Well, I mean, how do I think? You're going to have your top four. Drew, it matches up quite well for the Jets. You're at home, and you have your top four, which is what you rely on against the Devils' top top two lines, and then you'll get out your bottom pairing against some of these forwards, as you said, Drew, aren't overly imposing. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at playing up against Camilleri, Henrik, and Stepniak, I think that line is a small line. They're all pretty small. Mm-hmm. So I think you're probably going to go with Enstrom and Myers, a mobile defense pairing. Not to say that Trouba and Buffon aren't, because they are. But I think you're probably going to go with a mobile pairing like that. And then you're going to probably go Buffon and Trouba, as you may disagree here, but Buffon and Trouba against Palmieri, Zajac, and Blandisi, I think it'll be, who I don't know anything about. It's because Zajac and you're looking at a little more of a bigger player, a little more strength. And Zajac doesn't skate as well as he did. He had some surgeries on his was a knee there, I think. So if you watch Travis Zajac 5 years ago and now, there certainly is, I think, a loss of maybe half a step. You could even say maybe a full step, and he's having a little bit. Yeah, he's not as effective as he once was. Bigger player, so that's how I would see the matchups being.
Joseph Blandisi, by the way, sounds like a Sopranos character.
He does, sort of does. I just checked to see if by any chance he was from the New Jersey area. He's not from. He's from Ontario. He's from Scarborough.
Yeah, but
it's a pretty good name for the New
well,
Jersey.
Makes sense,
Devils.
Right? Because in New Jersey, but he scored his first goal the other night against Ottawa. They scored 6 goals against Ottawa. No, I agree with you, Richie. I mean, you're probably going to see that deployment by the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, it's interesting to note for the New Jersey Devils, like Andy Green and Adam Larson have really formed a nice pair together. Andy Green's a very underrated defenseman. He, of course, was named captain of the Devils this year. And
you've always liked him. They give
and, well, Green and Larson have played the most minutes for the Devils this year. And that's because guys like Severson and Jelena and Helgeson, who hasn't played much this year. I don't even know if he has played a game this year, but he might play tonight versus the Jets. But they shelter those guys a little bit, and I think that's where the Jets can take advantage, especially if Drew Stafford and Alexander Burmistrov are back in the lineup. I think that's who you can exploit, and they do protect those guys and try to not have those guys in the defensive zone too much starts, I mean. You know, you talk about the Devils, and you know everybody wants to think that this Devils team has, you know, been so much better offensively and defensively. Well, no, it's really the goaltending. It really is, and that's not to take anything away from how they've played, because I'm a big Camilleri fan. I really like Lee Stempniak. They've played well, but this isn't an offensive juggernaut. The Devils haven't turned into an offensive juggernaut.
For sure,
I mean, they're winning a lot of games 2-1, 3-2. The 6-3 game a couple nights against Ottawa, that was an aberration. I mean, the Devils don't score 6 goals a lot. The Jets, I mean, this is going to be a game to me that's won at 5-on-5.
And winning at 5-on-5 does play
like
into
most
the,
games are.
Yeah, it's like most games. That's true. But the Devils are very good 5-on-5. They've allowed the 6th fewest 5-on-5 goals against in the entire league. So that is, I mean, probably a testament to Corey Schneider as it is to anybody else.
I mean, Corey Schneider, a goalie that's played many times in the MTS Center, Drew.
Sure.
The Jets got to get in his face, get traffic to the net. It's interesting to note that the Jets were putting Buff in front of the net on the power play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to get to him. And, we talked about it. The Jets have scored 1 goal or less in 6 of their last 10 games. So you got to get the greasy goals, go to the net, you know, do whatever you have to do, you know, to get to Corey Schneider. It's not easy because, as Rich and I were just talking about, he's one of the best goalies in the NHL.
He certainly is. The Devils, if you look at their special teams, they're 14th on the power play in the league, 11th on the penalty kill, so sort of solid right in the middle of the pack when it comes to the league. You know, if it's you're absolutely right. You're not going to get, you know, cheap goals past Corey Schneider for the most part. So you're going to have to go, like you just said, Ezzie. Mm-hmm. It's going to have to be one in the trenches, in the dirty areas, you know, which the Jets haven't been able to really do that successfully as of late. You know, get any sort of offense going. You hope that there's a boost getting, you know, Drew Stafford back in the lineup. I mean, you're not going to get much of an offensive boost from Alex Burmistrov, but it just does allow sort of the bottom guys to get bumped down a little bit more. That's almost the benefit.
Burmy has been better offensively as of late.
In the last 20 games, I would agree with you. And I mean, you know, and I like what you've seen out of Joel Armia in the brief period of time where you've seen him sort of take on a bigger role in the top 6 with the Winnipeg Jets or the top 9. So for a guy who I was fairly down on Joel Armia because, you know, when the Jets called him up and he couldn't crack the lineup for however many games in a row, he was just sitting in the press box.
You were very down on Joel Armia, Drew.
I was, and I've been, you know, mea culpa, I've been impressed by his performance, particularly when he's been playing with skill players like Perreault and Ehlers. So I'm interested to see how that carries forward, at least throughout the rest of this season. On this team, given the limitations with the roster, he's certainly an NHLer on this team. We'll see everything else along that front. You know, any sort of keys to the game from your perspective, Richard, for tonight, or you just think it's going to be, you know, it's a very
you got to grind out a win.
It's a cliche game, sort of.
I don't care how you do it. You need points. You can't lose another one at home.
Yeah, no, it kind of is, Drew. You know, the matchups are there for you. You know, it's kind of top heavy against top heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know who you're going to be facing here. You know that, as you mentioned, Larson and Green, they're going to line up against, you know, on the road, granted, they'll line up against the loud little Wheeler line as much as possible. And you're going to have to beat a really good goalie. There's not too many keys about this game. They just still are lacking Scheifele. So it's just a matter of executing tonight against this Devils defense. They're going to be able to skate with you. So I do agree with Ezzy's point there. You want to be throwing the puck in net and driving the net and playing a little bit more of a physical style, I'd say, against this team. If you look at it, one thing I'd say is, that's not the, you know, you have Tutu and Ruutu up there.
But on their fourth line,
that's
yeah.
not the most physical group. So if you could exert your physical force a bit more than usual, that might be helpful as well.
Tutu's apparently got over 100 family and friends coming to this game. Last time Tutu was in Winnipeg, he was a healthy scratch.
Yeah, and that was Pete DeBoer?
Yep.
Yeah, and that didn't go over well.
No, especially when you have that many.
I mean, I remember,
coaches
yeah.
have to have a better
yeah.
feel for the game. I mean, I know you don't always, you know, get in the lineup just because, but, you know, a guy, you
it
know,
was,
veteran
I forget
like
who
that.
He's replaced by in that game, but it was somebody who was
Midland.
Not going to be, yeah, exactly.
Let's head to break. We'll come talk more about the Jets and Devils. We'll be joined by Devils play-by-play broadcaster Matt Lachlan. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with all your Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program New Jersey Devils play-by-play broadcaster on WFAN, Matt Lachlan. Matt, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Always a pleasure to talk some hockey and to join my good friends on the Illegal Curve. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well, Matt. How about yourself?
Real well, thanks. I mean, this has been a surprising season for the Devils. I don't think there were very many people who would have said that coming up on the All-Star break that they would be in a playoff spot. But here they are, and that makes it fun. Winning is all what this is all about, right?
Absolutely. That's where I was going to start. You know, we were talking last segment about how the Devils are, if not the surprise team in the NHL, certainly one of the top two surprise teams in the NHL. You know, from your perspective, you know, obviously coming into the season, most prognosticators would have thought it was going to be a down year for the Devils. You know, why such a surprise? Why such a good performance from this squad, you know, right up to the All-Star break, you know, they're sitting in a playoff spot?
I think that thing that most of us overlooked, and shame on those who have seen him play regularly over the last couple of years for doing so, was just what Corey Schneider means to this team. He gives the Devils a chance every night. So when you go out there knowing that at most, generally, two goals are going to be scored against, you go out there knowing you have a chance to win. And he has carried the workload. He has been brilliant. All his numbers, not just goals against, but his save percentage and all those things, have been top-notch. And so each night that he's in goal, the Devils go out with a sense that they can win it and then throw in guys who needed to bounce back. For instance, Adam Henrique off a season in which he played injured for the second half. Travis Zajac, who knows that he had to have more than 25 points in a full season. Things like that. They've come back with a little bit more of a sense of urgency. New coach injects a little life. So that all adds up. But really, I think the fact that Corey Schneider was there and kind of got overlooked is why everyone looks at this as a surprise, but maybe in retrospect shouldn't be.
Now, Matt, we were talking about it right before we had you on about how not a lot of people, and you mentioned it too right off the top of the segment, not a lot of people were picking the Devils to make the playoffs this year, and I'm a Devils fan, you know that. But when you look at what Ray Shiro did in his first summer as GM, signing Lee Stempniak, a lot of Jets fans here wish the Jets had signed Lee Stempniak, acquiring Kyle Palmieri from the Anaheim Ducks, bringing in a guy like Tyler Kennedy, Yuri Talusti. I mean, doesn't he deserve a lot of credit for the moves that he made? Because, I mean, you look at Stempniak, 12 goals, Palmieri, 20 goals. I mean, these moves have really paid dividends early on here for the Devils.
Without question, and, relatively low cost. Sorry about that, a little early Saturday morning frog in the voice. But and really low cost, a couple of picks going to Anaheim for Kyle. And then, you know, Stempniak's a PTO, Kennedy's a PTO. David Schlemko, who has been awesome for the Devils, just giving them a veteran presence on the blue line. You know, he comes in on a one-year deal. So these have been really cost-effective moves. And it also points out to, I think, another reason why the Devils are probably playing as well as they are. Schlemko's on a one-year deal. Stempniak, it turns out, is only a one-year deal. They have Palmieri, he's a restricted free agent, but he's playing for a new deal. So there are a lot of guys who are also playing for new deals. So throw in the guys who want to bounce back, who were here last year in an awful year and wanted and embraced the new atmosphere, guys who are playing for next year, and Corey Schneider's play, and you know it all adds up to a pretty good run so far.
Hey, Matt, I want to ask you about Damon Severson, guy who's very talented. I mean, impressed me when I've seen him play. There's some growing pains, I know, being a young defenseman in the National Hockey League. How has he progressed in his second full season in the NHL?
I think that he would say it's been okay, given what the expectations were. Now, he's not been bad, but he had 17 points last year in a year in which he missed 30 games with a broken foot. So you look at those numbers and you project, okay, a second-year experience and knowing the league, what can you bring? And it hasn't quite been there offensively. But we forget he's just a kid, and we forget that he's played barely a full season in the National Hockey League, and the learning curve is enormous. So I don't think they're disappointed in him. I think he's disappointed that he's not been able to produce a little bit more offensively. The Devils have asked recently, and if you look at the numbers, for their D to become a little more aggressive, a little bit more involved, and it's happened with Adam Larson in particular. So it may be over the next few games, and then after the All-Star break, we'll see that with Damon too.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is New Jersey Devils play-by-play broadcaster Matt Lachlan, discussing the Devils ahead of their visit to MTS Center tonight to play the Jets. Wanted to stick with the back end, Matt, and talk about Adam Larson. Of course, he was a fourth overall pick back in 2011, and sort of slowly developing. There was even some talk he might be on the trade block a couple of years ago. Are we beginning to see Adam Larson really round into form to be a top-flight NHL top-pairing defenseman?
I think we are. Now, I don't know what his offensive upside is. You know, I don't know if he'll ever be considered among the elite offensive defensemen in this league, but he plays all the big minutes with Andy Green. He's up against the top players every night. He's out there on the penalty kill. He's out there late in the game. He's out there late in the period. So he plays those enormously hard minutes, and now he's starting to show a little bit of offense, which is exactly what the doctor ordered. So I think, yeah, we're seeing it. You look at him, he carries himself as a 32-year-old, but he's just 23. He has now an understanding of this game and how to play. His confidence is at an all-time high. That had to be rebuilt a little bit. You know, it was broken down over the first few years because the Devils were struggling and he was in and out of the lineup. Now, since the second half of last year and through this year, he's a regular. He doesn't have to worry about it. He doesn't have to worry about a mistake, meaning he's nailed to the bench or maybe being a scratch. It's tap him on the back and go out and go get him next shift. So I think we're seeing that the Devils were right in selecting him as high as they did. Again, don't know, you know, where the offense will be. I mean, he's never going to be like his fellow countryman, Erik Karlsson. He's not that kind of a player. But, you know, he could be a 25, 30-point player in this league from the blue line, and that's not bad.
Matt, we got to ask you about Travis Zajac. As you know, Zajac is from Winnipeg, and he has a lot of. There are a lot of Zajacs here in Winnipeg, so we got to ask you about him. He had 4 points the other night against the Ottawa Senators, a goal and three assists, and he obviously had a disappointing year last year. I think he'd probably admit that himself. Do you think Travis Zajac is starting to look like the Travis Zajac of old?
I think that he is. I think that what we have seen with Travis is when you put him with other offensively gifted players, his game elevates to, you know, he is not necessarily the creator, a center. So he needs wings to help him round out his game, if you will. And he's got that this year, and it's helped. Now, he was in an awful drought until he scored the other night. Had not scored since early in November. But, again, the numbers don't always tell the tale. He's their best faceoff man. He's out there again against the top lines. You know, penalty kill, all the things that a team needs to succeed in addition to scoring goals. And he's there. He's got the coach's confidence and trust. So they're just trying to find a way to kind of unlock it a little bit more. I know he was fighting it. Hopefully the outburst the other night will lead to a continuation of that. I do know this. He's thrilled to be here when we arrive. Big smile on his face. Home in Manitoba, home in Winnipeg. And, you know, maybe he'll put a nice show on for the fans here in town.
Matt, how different is it around the team now with Lou Lamoriello being in Toronto, and that's no disrespect to Lou Lamoriello, who did as probably as well of a job as anybody could do in an organization for as long as he did with the Devils. But we know Ray Shiro has certainly different policies, and you've been covering the team for some time. How different is the atmosphere?
Yeah, I mean, it is different. What hasn't changed is the dedication to winning. I mean, that's what Ray is here to do, is to get the Devils back into the playoffs on a regular basis, and then contend for a Stanley Cup for a long time after that. So that emphasis hasn't changed. It's really just a way of going about doing the business. And I think the symbols are Mike Camilleri wears number 13, and Joe Blandisi, who will play tonight, wears 64. Those numbers were not seen on the Devils players, certainly 13 ever. The higher numbers once in a while, but you had to be Jaromir Jagr or Alexander Mogilny to wear them. So those changes are there, you know, facial hair, all that. I think what's happened is the Devils sped up the process that had begun under Lou Lamoriello, which is modernizing a little bit, getting younger, getting faster. But, you know, Lou was loyal and is loyal, and he had players off that 2012 season that he thought we could get one more kick at the can. And so he kind of kept a few guys around probably longer than he should have. But so Ray's task was to get younger, faster, and more modern in that respect. And so he has definitely done that. If you look a little bit at what Lou did before he left, Corey Schneider's acquired. He is there to supervise the draft that brings in Adam Larson. He signed Joe Blandisi as an overaged free agent OHL player, and I don't know what Joe is going to bring, but he looks like he's a real NHLer, and the Devils got a break there in signing him. So there were some gifts left in the basket as he left. But Ray has brought a more open, fresh air approach, if you will, more media-friendly, more fan-friendly. He'll be judged, as all GMs are, though, on the wins and losses, and, you know, so far, so good.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is New Jersey Devils broadcaster Matt Lachlan, talking about the Devils ahead of their game tonight at MTS Center. Wanted to ask you, Matt, about John Hines. Obviously, this is his rookie year as an NHL head coach. He was Ray Shiro's AHL coach when Shiro was with the Penguins. You know, what has most impressed you about John Hines and what he's brought to the Devils coaching staff?
Well, he has coached on all levels. He has coached the United States national team. He has coached in college and then spent the last 5 years prior to this as the head coach in the American League. So he's got experience on all levels. He's young, so he brings that youthful perspective too. A real student of the game, great communicator. You know, there's no hidden agendas. Look, you didn't play well. Don't do that again. Not going to let it go. On the other hand, here's what you did well. Way to go. Keep it going. The players do like that. There are no doghouses that we've been able to see so far. And I think that he just comes with a very direct, serious, yet open approach, very much like the best teacher you ever had, in that, you know, he's prepared, he's challenged and excited by what lies ahead, he's got all the answers, and, you know, he's willing to be out there kind of sharing it with you. His energy has been noticeable. And he has really, you know, again, the Devils got a little bit of a break. Why he wasn't given a chance in Pittsburgh when they made their most recent changes overall, and I'm not talking about this year, you know, I don't know. But once Ray was able to secure his services, the Devils found a guy that, you know, is one of those up-and-comers, no doubt.
Matt, we wanted to ask you about another guy that has Manitoba ties. He's born in Rankin Inlet, but he spent a lot of time in Winnipeg, Jordan Tutu, and it was a little controversial here in Winnipeg last year. He had a lot of friends and family, but he was a healthy scratch by Pete DeBoer. Obviously, Pete DeBoer had his reasons, but I guess the first part of the question is, do you expect him to play tonight? And, you know, have you seen a more focused and different Jordan Tutu this year? Because he's certainly been in the lineup more than he was last year.
Yeah, oh, I do, no doubt. He got a chance last year after the coaching change to play a little bit more regularly, and he did sign very quickly after the season ended. I don't know, quite frankly, if he had let it go a while and then Ray took over as the GM, whether or not he would have been signed by Ray. I don't know. Ray let a lot of guys go. He was looking to change things around. Not that Jordan was a problem at all, not that he couldn't be part of the solution, but when you're brought in and charged with changing things around, you tend to let some guys go, and they did that. You know, he didn't re-sign Scotty Gomez. He bought out Dinah Zubris. So I don't know where Jordan would have been. That being said, he was signed, and so he's part of the package, and he's been terrific. You know, he's never going to be a goal scorer. His fighting days are down a little bit, but he's tough as nails, and he gives everything he's got. He has become a little better. In the beginning of the year, he was running around a little bit. He's become a little more structured. He might argue, and I would lose that argument, both physically and maybe intellectually, too, if he was sitting right next to me. But it appeared to me he was running around a little bit too much. You look at his minus, and it's not very good. But he's become more settled the last, 15, 20 games or so. And there's no doubt when you come to a game, whether it's here in his home province or no longer his home province, but nearby, and playing in, you know, in this province coming up through junior, you notice him. And I think that's the best you can say for any player. He's a noticeable player.
Matt, final question. John Moore, you know, not a lot of talk about him. The Devils go out, Ray Shiro, and he signs him, you know, a younger free agent, signs him to a three-year deal in the offseason. Certainly not short on size, and certainly a very good skater. But what has he brought to the table this year that maybe surprised you? Because he's logging the third most minutes on the back end.
Yeah, and I think that's just it. That his reliability and is really most surprising. You know, he's a former first round pick of Columbus, and then he bounces around. He goes to New York, and then he goes to Arizona, and here's a young kid whose head's just spinning. And the Devils come in and offer him a three-year deal, so his future, at least, you know, for those 3 years is secure. He likes he liked what he heard in terms of what the Devils were hoping to do and get better, get younger, get faster. He's got all the requisite skills that you need. He's got size, as you mentioned. He's got great wheels. Haven't seen his shot as much as I would have liked, quite frankly. I saw him in preseason. I said, this guy's got a hammer. Haven't seen it quite as much. But he has now he's hurt, so he won't play tonight. He's on the injured list. He hurt him. He had been battling some lower body injury that he aggravated the other night. But, you know, he runs the power play at the point. He's been given that opportunity at times. And, boy, just a wonderful find. Yeah, and one of those guys, kind of like Schlemko, different kind of player, but, you know, you know him, you know he's been in the league for a while, but, you know, he hasn't really done much. What is he about? We get caught up too often looking at numbers, and both he and David, they have been terrific. John and David have been a really formidable group on that blue line, but unfortunately we won't see John tonight.
Matt Lachlan is the New Jersey Devils play-by-play broadcaster on WFAN. Matt, really appreciate your time. Always good talking to you, my friend. And we'll see you later on this evening at the rink for the Jets and the Devils.
You got it, guys. Pleasure to talk hockey with you guys all the time. Looking forward to catching up face-to-face tonight.
Likewise, Matt.
See you tonight, Matt.
See you later. It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290.
Anything is possible, but we really haven't discussed where we're going from here. Jonathan, as you know, has been suspended, and we haven't had any discussion about where this goes next. I've told both Jonathan and his agent that we will trade him if and when we can make a deal that is good for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Tampa Bay Lightning general manager Steve Yzerman addressing the latest developments in the Jonathan Drouin saga. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and the total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. The buzzword throughout the NHL was they've chosen the nuclear option, that being Jonathan Drouin and Alan Walsh, cutting off all ties with the Tampa Bay Lightning organization, refusing to play for the Syracuse Crunch of the AHL. Are you surprised that it's come to this point in time, or did you think that this was a possibility once this entire saga sort of started to become public earlier this month?
I was a little bit surprised to click on Alan Walsh's Twitter account and see that I was blocked.
Really?
I don't really care.
Are you actually blocked?
Yeah.
Really?
I might have said something, I think, a few years ago, negative towards Alan Walsh. But how much of this situation has to do with what Alan Walsh is telling Jonathan Drouin?
Actually, Drew and I just blocked you. We can't hear anything that you're saying.
That's
right.
Right. I blocked you from Twitter so many times at this point in time, I've lost count.
No, but Jonathan Drouin, and I know Rich and I got into this a couple of weeks ago, and I think even last week. I mean, Jonathan Drouin has a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. What's happened here that he's so out of favor with Lightning GM Steve Yzerman and head coach John Cooper? I mean, he's making it very difficult for Steve Yzerman to trade him.
It's getting out of hand now. First problem is he's taking advice from Alan Walsh. That's the first problem.
You think this is the you think Alan Walsh just going along with what Drouin wants? Or you think Alan Walsh is whispering in his ear, this is the next step
you need
to take?
That's a fair point, Drew. I mean, there's responsibility on both of their shoulders. But Alan Walsh is an instigator, and he likes to move the ball, and he likes to put pressure on negotiating and management. So in a contract negotiation, he wants to put pressure on the guy he's negotiating with. Sometimes that's public, sometimes that's not. But here he's taking that approach in a trade request. And if Jonathan Drouin plays and dominates, he's likely to be in the NHL soon. You assume with another team. Mm-hmm. He doesn't play at all. I understand if the trade is being like finalized and you pull a guy out of the lineup because you don't want to get him hurt. That's fine.
Sure. But the Lightning would probably do that on their own.
If the trade is not in the queue in NHL, then forget it. You're exactly right, Drew. You're absolutely right about that point, by the way, that the Lightning would not want him to play if they were that close to a trade.
Sure. I just don't see the benefit from Jonathan Drouin's point of view. The Tampa Bay Lightning are playing.
Oh, there is no benefit.
They're playing very well without him. They've won seven in a row.
Yep.
He's not contributing to the Lightning lineup.
So why is he scratched during the playoffs last year?
So why is there added pressure on Steve Yzerman? If I'm Steve Yzerman at this point in time, I say, go away. I'm not going to deal with this in the midst of the season when I have to deal with Steven Stamkos. I just don't see why Yzerman won't say, okay, go home. You're not getting paid. I'm going to focus on the roster and the team that's in front of me. That's way more important than dealing with you. And maybe I'll get around to you at the draft when I have more time.
But the problem, Drew, is that it's not that simple because he's got so many moving parts there with Stamkos and such. And this team, is it the real deal? Can they make a move up the standings? Can they take over the first spot in the division? I mean, if Drouin provides you with an opportunity to improve your team, you can't just ignore him.
Fine, but he hasn't provided you with – he hasn't done anything for your team for going on his entire NHL career for the most part at this point in time. So I get the Stamkos point of view, but I don't think the Lightning are sitting there saying, oh, crap, now we're going to trade Stamkos and we don't have Drouin to jump into our lineup as a result. I think they're going to say, well, this guy wasn't really doing anything for us. He didn't do anything for us in the playoffs last year when we got to the Stanley Cup Finals. Why do I really care what he wants?
You get the feeling that we're almost kind of looking at an Alexandre Daigle right now. And what I mean by that is...
Is he starring in a new Hollywood movie?
Exactly. But, I mean, Jonathan Drouin, what does he have, eight goals, eight NHL goals, two NHL seasons. I mean, the guy, again, I mean, he's an incredible talent. Played with Nathan MacKinnon in Halifax of the QMJHL. But, I mean, the way that he has conducted himself is ridiculous. And You know, I agree with you, Drew. Jonathan Drouin and Alan Walsh, they have no leverage right now. He's in the second year of an entry-level contract. Steve Yzerman has other priorities, namely the fact that his team is in a playoff race right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that bothers me the most is that he fails to report to the Syracuse Crunch of the AHL. The Syracuse Crunch, if you've looked at the standings, they're fighting for a playoff spot in the AHL. They could use him.
That's a great point.
And he's getting paid to play hockey. He was assigned to the Syracuse Crunch of the AHL.
Yeah. He played a few games for
him. He has a job.
Yeah, he did, but still, he's absolutely right.
He's under contract. Just like me, I can't choose to just not show up at work.
Sure.
I mean, you don't just have the option of, oh, I'm not going to go in today because I don't feel like it, or I don't like my job, I'm not going to go. Well, you know what happens in that case? You get fired.
Well, from Yzerman's perspective, Drouin needs another two games on an NHL roster this year to get another year vested and become a free agent another year closer. If he sits at home for the rest of the season, Yzerman probably gets more leverage or gets a bigger return in a trade market because Drouin's 2 years away from any sort of free agency.
You read Elliot Friedman talking about this. A lot of teams are backing off Jonathan Drouin now.
I kind of feel like that is an opening for another team, though. Like, if a bunch of teams back off, then some team says, okay, here's our opportunity to make a little bit better of an offer. Maybe not as good as we would have made at the beginning because so many teams were in there, and we'll make a move. So I'm not so sure that's going to mean that there's no trade coming.
No, I think there will be teams. I just think that maybe before, you know, there might have been maybe 10 teams after him. Now that list might be 5 or something like that. I think some teams are kind of looking at this guy and saying, I don't know if we want this guy on our team.
Fair enough, but there's been a lot of
problem children who've been. I mean, Ryan Johansson just got traded, a couple weeks ago.
By the way, as a quick aside, he has been tremendous. We mentioned earlier, but he has been tremendous since he was acquired by Nashville.
Yeah, well,
dominating games
to the surprise of really not that many.
Well,
people.
I mean, this good, he's been really good.
I mean, from Drouin, I mean, going back to Drouin though, if I'm Yzerman, if I'm Steve Yzerman, I'm looking at this and saying, great, one less thing for me to worry about right now.
Nah, I don't think so. I don't agree, Drew. You're second in your division.
Yeah.
In a wide open Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Aside from, I think, the Capitals, right? Every other team, I think, is very similar, and I'm sure they think that they can beat the Capitals. He's an asset that is not being utilized.
But he was an asset last year that wasn't utilized at all,
and
he made it to the Stanley
Cup Finals. I agree
with
Rich. I mean, at the end of the day, he's a third overall pick who they have a lot invested in, right? They've developed Jonathan Drouin. Regardless if he's underperformed, they have to get something back for him.
Look, I'm not saying that they're not going to get something back for him. I just don't think now they have any urgency to get something back for him before the trade deadline.
I think you got to move him before the trade deadline. I think you got to move him as soon as you can. Move him in the next week if you can. I don't think this can't be a distraction anymore.
I don't think it will be a distraction at this point. He's not on the roster.
He has no leverage. He has no leverage. Drouin and Walsh have no leverage here.
Yeah.
Okay, and
no
you guys are right. Yeah, no hand, because you guys are right because the idea is how successful they were without him. Fair enough. But I don't think you can just take Drouin, Steve Yzerman, and say, see you later, this is not an issue, because you don't know. Injuries happen. You might need a guy with that skill level. You might need a guy at that skill level. Anyways, you might have an offer there that allows you to improve your team. So he is certainly not a part that you throw away and ignore.
And Richie, I think you move him now because you could get a player that could possibly help you now.
Well, there's that argument, but there's also the Steven Stamkos thing. If you can't sign Steven Stamkos, what does your team look like? Are you going to move him? Are you going to keep him? That is the pressing issue here.
Absolutely.
So that's fair, Drew. But, I mean, those play a part as well. If you trade a guy with the skill level of Steven Stamkos, it's pretty tough to trade a guy the skill level of Jonathan Drouin. You just traded two top three picks.
Well, in Drouin's case, they don't have a choice. I mean, he's never playing for the Lightning again.
No,
you never know. You never know.
Really?
You
think
you
can envision a manner? And anyways, let's go to break. We're supposed to be joined by Don Maloney, Arizona Coyotes general manager, coming up in the next segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.